Hello again. Welcome to the Doomer Optimism podcast. Today, our guest is Flavia. Hi, Flavia. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks so much for inviting me for this conversation. Yeah,
it was great to have you. So you live in Brazil, right?
Yeah, I live in a city called Nova Iguaçu, which is a part of Rio de Janeiro metropolitan region. So born and raised and currently here in Rio, Brazil.
Okay. Do you want to give us a little bit, talk a little bit about your background, kind of, you know, how growing up was like and what were your formative influences that led you into the topic of today, which is going to be about, you know, regeneration, as well as, you know, what digital technologies can do to kind of support that, maybe what the limitations are. But do you want to talk about kind of what led you up to here?
Sure. So here, as I mentioned, my city, I grew up kind of nice childhood, nothing fancy. Really, my parents, they both, my mother's stay-at-home mom and my dad were accountant. I grew up comfortably. But deep down in me, I'm a cancer sign, so I'm kind of emotional and into relationships. And I grew up like watching my mom and my dad fighting over money. So money was kind of something that led me some wounds, and I could understand this like zooming out as an adult. But I just said that growing up, I had this kind of wound of seeing my mom and my parents fighting over time over money. And then I grew up really into this mindset of having to kind of follow that script. You go to university, then you find a job to a company and you go with your life around that. And that was kind of what I was doing. I studied pharmacy, which is kind of a topic, but I was already interested in biological system, how this, our living organisms, how they work. And so I went to study pharmacy and college. And in a moment, I have my daughter. So it was kind of unexpected pregnancy. And it kind of clicked me when I had my daughter that script that I was following, I kind of jumped one step when I had my daughter during college. And I started to, for the first time, really analyze my life and what I was doing, what was the script that I was following, and started to understand what is it that I want to live and do in this world, and also how do I want to leave a legacy for my daughter. And then during college, I started participating in a group that was, I don't know if you're familiar with the term, but it's called Junior Enterprises, that are kind of volunteer students that run enterprise within the college. And it was my first volunteer job and the first contact to entrepreneurship. And actually, there was my first contact to people that were free enough to say, yeah, I can create my own job. I can dream big and I can question myself and things that I'm doing. So then I kind of started thinking about my life and things that I want to do and led. And I started questioning again that wound that I have around money and how our society are structured and how we are dealing with people and labors and the environment as a such. And so I began the trajectory of really inquiring what is it that I want to do, what legacies that I want to create. And also being able to do volunteer work allowed me to understand what is it that I want to work with, what is it that I want to put really my time and energy into. So I did other volunteer job in a NGO in a favela here, educational project in a favela here in Rio, where I would go and read to children and give them some contact to books and also literacy and storytelling. I was really into storytelling back then. And then during this kind of restructuring phase of my life, I was, as I mentioned, I was studying screenwriting and I wrote like a sci-fi idea for a movie, which are in a futuristic scenario. And in this futuristic scenario, had a totally different relationship to money. It was a post-monetary scenario. People were living in this sort of bioregional networks, and really communities were really well structured and connected, and the way that we organized were completely different, and had a really strong connection to technology, and we're using AI with sort of cyborgs using AI to coordinate ourselves and take care of us and the planet as well. So we had really diverse type of communities worldwide, so completely different but also connected somehow through technology. And when I wrote that, I was still not into technological space. It was just me having a lot of questions about how I perceived the word. And I wrote that, and my initial feeling was, oh my God, I'm so naive with those thoughts, because I had no one around me to that I could share these perspectives with. And then it kind of kept it in the drawer, that idea. And then I started, by curiosity, following people that were talking about big companies like social entrepreneurship, this type of different companies and alternative economies. And I was following these people and projects to realize that a lot of the concepts that I was thinking about alone, a lot of people were actually building and doing this stuff. So this was a major like breakthrough for me. Like, yeah, these are my people. I have to somehow get connected and start working with them, collaborating. And so going to one of these events about new alternative economies, I met people that I'm currently working with. Like, we have been working for 3 years together in a social currency project called Muda. So this was how I break the paradigm of, yeah, I have to work in a company that I don't align with the values. And I don't think that this is a really useful and impactful use of my time, to really find the people that were aligned with my goals and visions and passions, and that I could find a job that kind of gave me financial compensation, but also were aligned with my with what I wanted to do in the world. So this was kind of my start. And funny enough, the Muda, our social currency, is hosted on a blockchain platform. So this is how I also got connected to blockchain and Web3, and kind of allowed me to dive deeper into technology and people that were doing and building all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I think I went really further down into my childhood, but this is kind of the main points in my trajectory that kind of led me to this moment. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Thanks for that. When you say social currency, what does that mean? Is that like, me bringing eggs to my neighbor when, they can't make it to the store? What does social currency mean, and how does that interface with tech?
Yeah, so the social currency movement and practices been around for years. Like, they're really old social currencies that you don't really need like a blockchain platform or a digital currency. You can do it with paper. But the idea is what you mentioned about barter economy, and really creating a space and a currency that can circulate within a community. So instead of fiat currencies or nation currencies that are controlled by banks and the government, the idea of a social currency is to create an exchange system within a community, and really allowing that you can create a bridge between what you, as you mentioned, the eggs that you have, the excess that you don't really need. You can use something with those eggs, and you can find a demand. Well, there's someone that needs the eggs that I have here laying around and I'm not really going to use. So you can create a currency to connect this and make this connections between things that people are able to offer and the demands that are not being met within that that community. So the idea of local currency, for instance, I can talk about Muda, our project here in Rio. So our currency is non-convertible. So it's really meant to circulate within a community. You cannot buy Muda with fiat, with reais, which is our national currency here in Brazil. You cannot buy it. So we, to earn Mudas, we created a set of social and conscience actions that we want to incentivize our community to do. So so instead of loan our bank, so how current fiat money often gets created. So what we did was, you can meditate for 20 minutes. You earn something. If you plant a tree, you can earn mudas. So if you help during the pandemics, if you help elder people do some errands, you can earn mudas. So we created a list of actions that we want to incentivize that are not often incentivized by our economic system, can be incentivized through our social currency and through that people can earn mudas. We incentivize people to rethink what is valuable, what is it that we want to make sure it happens within our community, amongst other stuff. And of course, you can earn mudas by offering your service and products within the platform. So, and this idea of local currency has been for years around. It's nothing new per se, but it's really visible how, for instance, when we have crisis in the economic system, how these local currencies and movements, they get stronger, because that's an alternative way for people to circulate the goods and services.
Nice. Right. Okay. So it sounds to me like there's a recognition that fiat currencies don't really properly value the right things, or they just kind of value kind of financial wealth or access to capital, for example. And they don't really value, many activities, let's just say in the informal economy, that are actually incredibly important. You know, people, you know, serving each other, you know, engaging in ecological restoration. These are things that the typical market doesn't really value. And in fact, they often outsource the costs of their activities, you know, elsewhere. And so is that kind of the idea behind Muda is, you know, can we have some kind of sovereignty? So Muda, it sounds like, because it's not convertible, it's not subject to the whim of, you know, kind of global monetary markets, exchange rates, various things. So there's a notion of like building up sovereignty there, but then it's also kind of valuing the things that people actually really care about, that makes for a healthy life. Is that the idea? And do you want to riff on that anymore? Yeah.
No, yeah, exactly. That's the idea. And what I can add to that is also our ability, sovereignty, like, okay, I'm creating my own currency as a community. We're creating our own currency. And the mindset behind this currency would be abundance instead of scarcity. So let's create a currency that people can have a sense, okay, I can have this when I need it. We can experiment different mindsets and really different narratives to tell the people around money and how we trade and how we interact with each other. So, and one of the things like into the abundance mindset that we decided to experiment was gift economy. It was something that I'm particularly really into. So one of the ways to earn Muda is through doing those actions that it's a way that we can restructure what is valuable within a society, as you mentioned. You can also, of course, offer your services. But for people that, for instance, something that we recognize is for some people, especially people in favela and marginalized communities, sometimes it's really hard to find something that you can offer. Your sense of self and what is it that is abundant within you is really damaged. So a lot of people, don't have nothing to offer, especially if they don't have a profession or something that the market is given then value. So so it's really when kids the size of us that they recognize that some people they find it hard to offer things, and some people sometimes if they're not into doing those actions, but and still if they need the Muda to access some of the things that we do, we can just provide it to them because Muda is an abundant currency. So we have also like a form where people can just go there and say, yeah, I want some amount of Mudas. And and we were experimenting in this kind of gift economy. You can also kind of donate if you have access. You can donate to the fund, and people that need it can just request it. So we can also play with how we deal with money, how we deal with currency, and experiment this concept of abundance, that it's possible to have the currency for everybody. It's possible that we can all have our needs met and keep sharing, so we don't have to accumulate things. Whenever we need something, it will kind of flow to us. So it allows us to experiment also a lot with how also our wounds, how we deal with money, how we deal with other people and services. So another thing, so we have a peer-to-peer market. So a lot of people put their kind of offer things that can serve. And we often question this relationship between someone buying the consumer relationship. So we are not so we try to break that out. We are not kind of consumers or employees. We're kind of peers. And how can we change this relationship? So how can we understand and be compassionate about the people that are offering and the people that are requesting? So there is so much to explore when we are creating a currency.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. It seems like that these days a lot of people are trying to rethink money kind of from the ground up, right? Because there's a recognition that, you know, money, you know, is kind of a reflection of what we value as society. One distinction people make, and maybe you can help me understand this better, is there's this kind of differentiation between proof of work and proof of stake. And it seems like for Muda, it seems like, you know, like in the US and other countries, like for a while, the proof of work, so to speak, was like the gold, you know, standard. And then it went to fiat. And then something like Bitcoin has proof of work that, you know, the machines were able to solve these codes and used a bunch of energy. And somehow that tethers it to the real economy, or that's at least the argument. And it seems like what you're describing of the proof of work, so to speak, is the actual, like, doing something valuable for your community. And I don't really understand proof of stake as well. To me, it has something to do with stakeholders. Like, are you a stakeholder in this? You know, are you affected by this activity? But I don't have a great understanding. I'm wondering, can you, I guess, does Muda graft onto those concepts at all? Or is it, and if they do, can you help me understand them?
Yeah, no, it's actually not something that so I can give you like a background a little. So Muda, like the core team, the people that are kind of mostly behind the project, we're 9 people, and most of them, like 7 of them, are artists. So Muda was created by a group of artists that were clowns and theater teachers and actors, producers. So people within culture scene here in Rio, mm-hmm. that were kind of worried about the scarcity for cultural activities and events. And this was kind of what motivated. They were also kind of into environmentalism and activism. But then this was kind of what motivated, like looking at the scarcity and say, yeah, let's create something different. They got into the community banks and all these alternative local economy things. And then 2 of us are more into tech. So we don't, as we kind of, we use technology, we use blockchain, but it's not something that we often talk about in those terms. I particularly I'm not that technical myself, but what I understand as proof of work and proof of stake, as mentioned, proof of work, you got rewarded for labor, specific labor that you're doing for the community, for the chain. And proof of stake is you get the influence, you get the voting power and the rewards based on, let's say, influence within the network, how people are valued as a leader or someone of influence, and there's all this kind of voting. That's my understanding. I'm not an expert as well, but what you mentioned about Muda, and what I got in my mind about that is that we don't explore like this. Of course, it's important that we experiment reciprocity. Like once you receive something, you can be able to say, yeah, how can I give back to the community? How can I? So it's something that we often think about. How can we incentivize people to create their offers and be able to give back to the community and experiment these things? But for me personally, as here in Brazil, like inequality is really huge and social inequalities is really in front of your face, I often question myself, how can we ask people that are historically so marginalized and so that have been so exploited, how can we just ask them right away to give back when there's so much that was taken from them for years and ages? So I think there's, for some people, this is my personal opinion, okay, just to make clear. But I think that for some people, it's hard to analyze what is it that they can, like, to ask, specifically ask. So, yeah, you need to prove me your work into those actions, or you need to really participate and be engaged in the community and be a part, influential part of the, for what you do. And when they don't have the survival themselves to understand how could they do that. So I think that it's something that we try to do to incentivize. Yeah, let's get engaged. Let's participate. Let's do those actions that we highlight, the actions that we think is important, and you could be incentivized. But I also think that we need to look back and see, like, who is this person? Who? What's the background? Mm-hmm. Are they really able to participate, understand, or do they need more at first so they can understand what is it that they can give back? So I think my point that this balance and giving and taking and the reciprocity sometimes can be delicate depending on the background of the people that you're interacting with. Right. It just when you're talking about it, like proof of stake, proof of work, and just the concept of proof, what is it that you have to prove?
Right.
Sometimes can be delicate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it seems like you're trying to embed in the currency kind of the ethos of, like, you know, to each to give according to what they can and to receive according to what they need.
Yeah.
How can you design that into the currency itself?
Oh, yeah. We have no... It's experimentation, so we have no solid answers. We're just kind of doing stuff. So one thing that we do is our major like liquidity thing, like a major offering, something that really attracted a lot of people to our project, is that we offer weekly. Mm-hmm. We have an offer of organic food basket. So we deliver these organic food baskets to people in their houses. Mm-hmm. So once people kind of realize, especially in favelas and marginalized community, once they realize during the pandemics when we started doing this, that they could get food, actually healthy food, organic food delivered at their place without having to spend reais through an alternative currency, it really kind of sparked a lot of people into our platform, and people started kind of requesting for this organic food basket. And a lot of people that we are still doing that, we are weekly distribute these food baskets, and a lot of people that consume those baskets. Most of them, they are kind of earning mudas through that form that I mentioned, that the gift economy thing. And we realized that a lot of people kind of chose to, once the demand for this organic food basket, which is limited, once they realized that, they kind of started, so we don't have this organic food basket for everyone, so let's start planting. I have this backyard here that it's not being used. We could get it around and start planting. And this kind of incentivized also the creation of new planting sites and how you organize people. And some people that had the financial ability to buy their own food and their own organic food basket, kind of they step away. They don't request those organic food baskets that are, and they kind of led them to people that they recognize, those people that I really need. Because during pandemics, it was really kind of crazy. There were some people within the community that would stay during the day, kind of pressing F5 to update the platform. So they could reload the platform, and they were waiting for the offer to pop up so they could buy it. So they were really and this mindset of need, you know, and really putting a lot of energy to get that. And there's a lot of different things that happen within the project and the community that made us reevaluate what we're doing. And we also always changing those conscious actions. We always change them. We spend some time not doing them because a lot of people were not claiming them correctly. So we took them off. Now we put them back. And it's kind of a dance. We don't have like precise answers, but it's kind of what we're doing and learning and the same way, the same time. You're on mute.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Interesting. I'm curious, especially, you know, if you foresee kind of this alternative, you know, kind of monetary system, muda, like kind of growing and gaining more adherence. Do you see it as kind of an explicitly political project? And do you see it perhaps being perceived by, you know, politicians, you know, as kind of a threat to the political order, or how do you think about that? Of, you know, if we're thinking about these kind of, you know, regenerative transition and how this all interacts with, you know, the current political structures. I'm curious if you have like a theory of how that's going to kind of play out, and if you've already kind of seen some early indicators of how that might play out.
Yeah, so interesting. A lot of people within a lot of my co-workers and people within Muda, they are really political conscious and participating. And we sometimes we talk about that. How are we relating to political policies and things that are happening? And it's funny enough, it's a conversation that we never go much into, because it's also I think a wound for a lot of us, like how politics work and all those flaws. And I think some of us are more enthusiastic of getting involved and getting more political, even though a lot of what we say is really political. We understand Muda as a political action, getting involved and really claiming this position of, let's participate in how politics works and get more engaged in something that we tend to be cautious about. And even though there's kind of opportunities. So for instance, we are involved in agroforestry, and there is currently this movement within Rio of incentivizing political, the political, mayor, like some program of the Rio mayor is about incentivizing organic gardens. So it's related to what we are already doing. And then there was this conversation, yeah, let's get involved. Let's see how we could participate in those conversations. But we ended up not really pushing that much forward, even though that could be space for us to get involved more deeply. But I don't really think that they see us as a threat more. I think they could even see us as an opportunity, like to greenwash or do something like that. But yeah, regarding its scale, it's not a thing that we talk about. Do we want to grow? Mm-hmm. And as it is kind of think about like the communities, it's really based on how we interact with each other. We are now in a position that let's strengthen the relationship that we already have and touch the people that have already somewhat coming contact with a platform. It's a lot of people. So within our blockchain platform, we have more than 4,000 accounts, and a lot of those accounts are not active. So we often think, yeah, let's understand more and really strengthen the relationship that we already have, instead of growing so much and yeah, kind of losing control of and quality mostly of what we're doing. So I'm not sure if I answered you, but it's stuff that we think about, but we are kind of cautious about those things.
Yeah, makes sense. So you're also, I'm just looking at your Twitter profile now, founder of Centropia DAO and also associated with Common Ground. Do you want to talk about those things and how they interface with the Muda project?
Sure. Common Ground, when I was talking about like events, so kind of when I found Muda people, I started getting more involved in blockchain. And as I was starting to get more deep in blockchain and DAOs, like decentralized autonomous organization, which are mm-hmm. cooperatives that use blockchain, basically, going through this event, I met Florian, which is one of the founders of Common Ground. It is a communication platform, and invited me over to participate as a community person within the project. So, and Common Ground really allowed me to meet a lot of people, a lot of projects, a lot of DAOs, and kind of dive deeper into the Web3 space, which has been super cool. And Centropia DAO is kind of, as I mentioned before, all of my journey within technology started with a sci-fi piece, a sci-fi story that I imagined. And it was really spiked my gut, that vision. And when I started meeting these people and projects, I realized, yeah, instead of writing, I want to build something like that. So Centropia DAO is my way to kind of bring those visions and idea to life. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much me and a group of friends exploring various concepts and ideas. So I'm currently really diving into AI. How could we use AI to change how we organize ourselves, to change how we coordinate, to support us even in Korean about ourselves and understand how we could be better humans. And because for me, when I think about, yeah, we need to change how we deal with our resources and how we are taking care of nature, how we are stewards. I think to make this macro change and the big shift that I'm often really enthusiastic about, like making the big shift before, we need to work internally. So I'm also analyzing and consider how could we use technologies to support a massive conscious rise, in the sense like really incentivizing people to look inside and question how can it be better. So in my process, a lot of those questions about legacy and how do you want to, what kind of legacy you want to leave, what is it you want to really work with, what brings you passion, and all of these questions, when I came across them, really affected me. And I was just thinking, how could we use technology to support people to go through this process as well and see how it goes. So, and how Centropia relates to Muda is that I really want to experiment and use technology to change how we coordinate. Mm-hmm. I thought of a palette that I wanted to kind of experiment this tech with was a community garden. So how could we start a garden and use an agroforestry principles and really organize volunteers using technology to make it easier for people to find tasks and sign up to stuff and also find other volunteers. And so the idea of the palette that was inspired through the work that I do with Muda, I forgot to mention, but we also started planting ourselves. So when we realize, oh my God, these organic food baskets, they are so important. People are so so in need of those. Then another different sites of planting sites and agroecology sites, we got engaged with them. And then we started planting ourselves our own agroforestry. And that got me into putting my hand in the land and starting planting and learning and taking care of the land. And it was really another huge like transformational point and just getting back to nature and realize, oh my God, this is so simple. And nobody told me how to plant my own food. And this is so basic. Everybody should learn and to know how to plan their own food. And so kind of working with Muda allowed me to reconnect with this essence of, we need to get back to this basic work of taking care of the land, being able to eat the food that we have produced, and also go back into community, like doing stuff, not on my own. It's okay to have your own garden, it's great, but it adds a different cultural layer if you plant food with a community, with a group of friends. It's easier, it's funnier, and the results are really amazing. So for me, being able to go and from a grass land and going back now and seeing a tiny forest with trees way bigger than I am, it's really powerful to look back. Oh my God, we did that. Like 8-9 people, we did this work. So it's really powerful. And I wanted to do that as a pilot for Centropia as well. There is a land near my home that is unused. And every time I started planting and every time I crossed this piece of land, I just think it would be so powerful if we could, as a community, start taking care of this and produce our food. But there's several different steps for me to get there. There's the community aspect as well, because I don't really, here where I live, I don't really have this sense of community and belonging that gives me the openness to just gather friends and do that. So there's a step for me to steps for me to achieve that. But it was definitely a nice dream to think of, oh, it would be so powerful if we could do that. And at the same time, I could kind of create a technology that would make it easier for people to coordinate and do that.
Yeah, interesting. I'm very curious. So just for the audience, a DAO, the idea of a DAO, decentralized autonomous organization, is still a pretty new thing. I liked your kind of brief description of it's kind of like a cooperative with blockchain. Do you want to describe kind of like what does a decentralized autonomous organization, what does it afford in terms of thinking about how we coordinate each other to come together for these kind of public goods or collective kind of, goals?
Yeah. So it's funny because a lot of DAOs nowadays are just kind of Telegram groups and WhatsApp and Discord servers. Mm-hmm. But so Centropia DAO is not really a DAO yet. It's just me and a couple of friends talking about. But there's the idea of becoming a DAO in the future, which means that it's not kind of my project. It's everybody's project. So we can share the decision-making power, and we can have like a transparency around what's been done and built and who gets to participate. So the idea of a DAO or a cooperative that, so a cooperative, you have the sense of, yeah, this is something that we share. We all have like the ownership of this. But when we use blockchain technology, we have this ownership translated into code. And you can also have, and this, I think this allows for instance, there's also like DAOs that are really working nowadays in the sense that there's a lot of people that have like a share of the DAO and they can vote on. So I think having this shared ownership translated into code can allow more people to participate in the decision making. And there's the pros and cons. There's a lot of DAO that's kind of struggles and understanding who are those people that get to vote. So is it based on financial power? So a lot of DAOs, they kind of sell the governance token. So they ended up being controlled by people that have financial power to buy the tokens. So there's also this discussion, who gets that share of what we're doing is based on what, that we are distributing this power to run the project. But yeah, once you understand that and have this shared, you can have more of horizontal governance models that are really kind of secured on the blockchain.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so we kind of met briefly in person, or at least over audio, a couple weeks ago when you were hosting kind of a gathering of people around the world who are in these spaces, you know, generally, right? Interested in these topics we're talking about. What has it been like to, starting in Brazil, but then when starting to connect with people around the world, what has that been like? And, you know, do you see, there's, you know, kind of an informational collaboration where you're like, oh, that person in wherever Costa Rica or Canada is doing something really cool, we can kind of, you know, incorporate some of their ideas. And then there's other ways to think about coordination, let's say a bioregional scale or cross bioregional scales. I'm curious, like what the experience has been like and what you see as kind of the potential of bringing all of these different people together working in these spaces, like, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, it's been really, really cool. Like, as I mentioned, being able to meet so many interesting people. There's so many interesting people doing interesting work out there, and kind of common ground allowed me to, because when I was working only with Muda, we were really kind of local. So I was really into what we're doing here, connecting here and there with people that were also in building another social currencies. And when I got to Common Ground, which has kind of this vision of being a communication platform, it allowed me to meet and really understand like how many people, like how the greatness of this blockchain ecosystem, and how many people and projects are there that are really trying to build something different, not only talking about it, but really trying to build an experiment with different concepts, and how there is a lot of alignment as well, but there's also some criticism and different perspectives. And I think this is super amazing, like being able to gather people to discuss and share their ideas and network. And I don't really know how can be built from that, because it's out of my control. But being able to create a space for people to recognize themselves and share what they are interested in and connect is, for me, is really powerful. And I think, yeah, I did a little bit, but it can become stuff, really great stuff. So one of these Twitter spaces that I organized about collective intelligence, which is another topic that I'm really interested in, a lot of partnerships happened after that. So people got connected because they were so into the same topic that they got connected afterwards, and they're still in contact and building partnerships. So these spaces for networking and connections, I think they're super, super powerful, especially if we want to, if we have the optimism to build the change that we want to see. So we need to be together to allow this to happen. And we need to have these conversations. Even though they're the different perspective, it's important to talk about them. So we can try to figure it out and understand what is working, understand from our own project what is not working, what is kind of our blind spot where we are not seeing. And I think it's important to have voices from different parts of the world, from different cultures and backgrounds, because we often get so silent, so blind then by our own perspective, our narrow view of the world, that I think that a lot of big pictures and people that are really make big decisions, they cannot see like above the bellies. And so it's really important to wake up people that, yeah, your perspective of the world is just a tiny bit what we actually are as humans, as humanity. And yeah, the more we can have these conversations, I think the greater will be for us individually and for the stuff that we are doing and building.
Nice. Have there been any projects or ways of thinking that you've been especially inspired by that you're like, oh, I could, this is especially applicable to what we're trying to do here?
One thing that we've been talking and that I forgot to mention that I was, probably talking about it, about my work and Muda and Surupira and everything, is for me is the importance of recognizing that a lot that we are doing, it's not something new, like all this alternative economy process. It's actually ancestral. So getting back to indigenous cultures and their projects and their way of living, their current fight, because they are still kind of fighting, especially here in Brazil, they're still fighting and dying to protect the territories. So getting connected to that for me is something that I'm kind of missing. And I'm thinking, yeah, I should probably dive deeper to that, because it's hard to, as I'm working with tech, it's hard to make that connection. Mm-hmm. But it's something that that I think it's really important. There is a saying an indigenous leader here in Brazil that he often says that the future is ancestral. So, and I kind of agree with that. Even though we are not doing the things the same way, we need to get back to that knowledge about how to work as communities, how they had different values for interacting. So when I talk about community building for Web3, my mind gets back to, what is it about community building for indigenous cultures and what are those social jobs and roles that they had to make sure that we have conflict management, we have proper knowledge sharing. So there's just so much there to learn. Mm-hmm. And that should be heard right now. That's something that's often in my mind. And for Muda, we often say, we call ourselves like non-alternative or new economies. We call it others. So we don't use the term new, because it's our political way of saying and recognizing that we're not doing anything new. We're just reframing something that's been there for ages and it's been kind of erased by colonization and Western culture that came here and changed how we were dealing with ourselves and nature.
Mm. So I'm kind of broadly, or I'm kind of curious, you know, in terms of thinking about how we interact with technology, right? And, you know, do you see kind of these new kind of digital tools as being like kind of a bridge to, because, you know, obviously like a lot of the industrial, you know, infrastructure that allows for all of these things is being built on, you know, prior and current extractive systems. And it is a little bit, you know, like I agree that many of these digital technologies are incredibly powerful and can be very transformative, but there is a little bit of irony there as well, right? That we're trying to utilize these digital technologies, you know, blockchain, artificial intelligence, to also rediscover, you know, the ancestral ways. Do you see these technologies as kind of being able to integrate with those? Do you see them as being a bridge, but then, you know, perhaps as we think we learn how to reorganize society along more regenerative lines, you know, those patterns will be so embodied that they will no longer be necessary? Or I'm curious how you think about these questions.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for bringing this up, because it's something that I question myself a lot as well. So if I had tons of money to do something, I would probably invest in research on how to grow our own tech. As we grow our own food, how could we sustainably grow our own tech and being able to do it locally as well, and don't depend on these highly exploitative markets, like to create my cell phone, for instance. Like if you go through the process to make this, it's highly exploitative. And yeah, it's interesting. I hope that we get to this phase, like as we're seeing now, so many research into, yeah, there's alternative ways to create goods instead of plastic, or we can create, every now and then I hear people say, yeah, we can create something that we normally use from plastic from bioproducts. And there's all this research happening. And my hope that we get to some a point in the future where we can do the same with technology, and we can grow them locally and going back to environmentalism, and really don't depend so much on this kind of global exploitative markets that drains one site, so we can serve the whole world instead. Let's do some stuff regionally and more sustainably. And how could we do that? So yeah, there's something that I dream about, but I think it's hard to let it go completely, like technology. So a lot of people in the environment and social consciousness space, they often kind of tend to avoid technology and have a lot of criticism about AI and robots and all those things. And I personally think that these are tools, and we come here kind of factualist as well. Like we come here for a reason. All these things that we have developed, we have done this for a reason. And we are, as humanity and as Gaia, as our planet, we are in the process of growing. So we've done this. Okay, we are currently in this space. What is it that is good about what we've done that we should keep, and what is it that is bad and we should change and reframe? And I definitely think that technology is great. Like the fact that we are talking, I'm in Brazil, and where are you?
In the States, I'm in the States. I'm in Western North Carolina.
So the fact that we kind of chatting now, it's amazing. It's really powerful. Mm-hmm. So how can we keep those interactions globally, but also allowing us like me to work on my own community garden and you all your projects that you're doing, and we exchange what we know and strengthen ourselves and don't focus in the same time, focus being local, like global, but really with the conscience of our impact locally, because that's being conscious of where you are at, like physically, and what you're contributing, because that's where, because like I think of us humans also as really powerful parts of living system. So I'm also kind of byproduct. So everything that I'm eating and processing and what's now like my the air that I breathe and everything that my body is a mechanism. It's putting out there as well. So it's impacting the living ecosystem that I'm here. So I shouldn't be just to focus on global scale and also not to focus on local scale without seeing the greater picture. So how we balance that is, it's really a good question. And also how can we bring the concept of technology into how it's built actually into this concept of bioregionalism and local impact systems. I don't really have an answer, but that's kind of what I hope to achieve someday, that we get to this point that we can just go to a local, I don't know, a local factory or something and build our own technology based on what we have around and the minerals that we have around and, or I don't know, even byproducts, but the sustainable type of tech. I don't know if I have seen anybody talking about it, but it's something that we should focus on, definitely.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. You know, the movement that's closest or at least getting closest to me is what they call cosmolocalism, which is like this idea of design global, manufacture local. So you have like this global kind of commons and then local manufacturing. Of course, there's many constraints and challenges to that, right? Like right now, digital technology are basically six continent supply chains that require very specific metals that come from very specific places and very specific processes. You got to build the chips in say Taiwan, and then you know you extract the cobalt for your batteries in the Congo with very exploitative supply chain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it is an interesting movement. That's interesting. But in general, I think it's fascinating that so many people in this space are kind of being drawn to what you're describing, both relocalization, but also, kind of peer-to-peer networking bioregionally and globally, right? And it's kind of like trying to thread this needle where we want to become more embodied, but we also want to be more connected. And, there are some tensions there just with your attention and your time and everything else. But it seems right now that, we're kind of globalized, but in the wrong way, right? Where regions don't have much self-sufficiency. You have these global supply chains, but they're very, they're very exploitative. They're very hierarchical. They're very, all of these things. And so it's like, how do we, it's almost like we're inverting, how do we invert this kind of these dynamics so we kind of can get the best of both worlds, the local world and the global world. It's fascinating. And I think I think figuring that out is like this big attractor point, that basically most people in these spaces are kind of like, coming to of like, how do we figure this out? That this seems to be the next evolutionary step.
Yeah, totally. And for me, it also translates to like how I'm living. Mm. So I often like look at myself. So ever since I started working with Muda, I completely changed my habits, like start recycling, composting. But I know there is a limit into what can I do like in my own house. So of course I should think about that, but what we do as a community is way much more powerful. So to get into this state, as you mentioned, of balance and an understanding of our impact locally and globally, also starts like how I change my kind of personal life. So I can look locally and say, oh, I'm living sustainably with my peers like here, and we are kind of changing what we're doing. So I haven't yet stepped into this position that I could say, I'm doing that. So that was kind of my hope with Centropia DAO to start this community process and maybe kind of leave a local mark and the place that I'm living, just to say, yeah, let's, what if we do something slightly different and starting even experiment politics? Cause one of the things that I forgot to mention also about DAOs is the ability for us to experiment and reinvent how we relate to politics. Cause for instance, for me, it's something so, so distant from me and so corrupted and so, wrong in so many ways, like that we don't know that politics, it's something natural for humans. We need to sit down and talk about how we're gonna manage and deal with our shared space. So we both live in the street, so if something happens in our streets, there's a problem, we are calling somebody else to fix the problem for us. Like we call in the mayor or somebody else to fix it, when we could just sit and gather and start talking ourselves and figure out a way to fix it us, and not wait. It's so ridiculous that sometimes you cannot even fix the problem yourself. You have to respond to somebody else. And I think this type of communitary projects and work allow us to just get back to the state of sovereignty and really ownership. This is my space. I'm responsible for the space that I'm occupying as a human being. Yeah. So what is my responsibility is, and as a community as well, how can I interact with those people? And it's completely challenging. And a lot of people say, oh my God, keep me away from any type of relationship like that. I don't want to interact with my neighbors and make decisions. But I think it could be fun. I think it could... it's not only about making decisions and fight and imposing your ideas upon others. I think that's there's a sense of getting connected and having a space of support and understanding, oh, these people that live here, they are part of me. And this concept of wholeness and understanding, yeah, I think we could experiment with this concept of wholeness with people that are closest to us. So I'm telling this by personal experience. I don't have this sense of my neighbors are my friends, but I think that's something that I would like to have. Like my neighbors are my friends. I would love to live in a place that I wake up and I'm glad to support someone that lives across me, and I'm happy to see them flourish and happy to see them well. And I know if something happens to me, they got my back. And I think I would be so much happier if I could kind of live surrounded by this energy of, yeah, we mutually taking care of each other and our land, our resources. So I could just arrived. I would just close the camera, but we can just keep chatting.
Sure. Sounds good.
But just venting that it would be great for me to have this experience. I've heard people that had it and they were really in a lot of conflict. It was not a good experience, but as I haven't yet, I still have my heart open to having it and living the challenges of this type of community living myself.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's it. We have these kinds of conversations a lot on this podcast of like, how do you develop community? And there's a lot of movements of like intentional communities, and oftentimes they don't work out because you go in with the idealistic vision, but then the practicalities of day-to-day life pop up and people, you know, new conflicts arise. And I think oftentimes kind of what we kind of settle on is that these things just have to be built from the ground up, you know, slowly and organically. Like they start with your relationship with, say, one person, and then, you know, a crew of people or families or whatever it is. And these, you know, these kind of functional and also convivial structures can arise. Of course, they've arisen, you know, multiple, you know, infinite number of times throughout history. But you have to kind of take it slowly and work, you know, work on a, you know, an individual among individuals and then among larger groups and work out the kinks as you go. what I do want to ask her is about a little bit more about the AI and how she sees AI grafting onto all of this. I think a lot of people in this space and elsewhere are kind of skeptical of AI, right? It's is often seen as potential existential threat. But I've personally often, you know, been inspired by some of the AI art. I've been inspired by some of the potential use cases, like, for example, if you need legal advice, then perhaps you could get the AI to put out some things that you can get a lawyer to look over, but you have to pay much less money. Or, for example, say you wanted to start a community land trust, and often the legal fees are prohibitive. But if you can get a first draft document, putting everything you wanted into it, and get it written up, then it could actually lower the entry to creating, you know, many of these kind of alternative organizational arrangements than, you know, you currently could do within the legal system.
Murphy's Law. Okay. Yeah. I was listening to you about the AI part. It's really something that I'm also curious and talking to people about it. I've been playing around with ChatGPT, most of the people, but I'm also kind of concerned on how these technologies are being built and like how they are using, what kind of context they are using to build their models. Are people like artists being they're used as a reference, and are they being somehow compensated? What is the relationship to people that work that are used to build these models? And so there's definitely a lot of conversations related to ethics and around these technologies, but I also think that they can really solve a lot of problems and can really be used as a way to give access to people to stuff that they wouldn't normally get. So, and also allowing us to focus on the labor that are really not robo-like. So for instance, I felt during my career, when I do something that is really robotic, like the work that is really kind of robotic, I don't feel really fulfilled. Like, oh my God, I'm not using my creativity. I'm not really exploring anything. I'm just doing repetitive work. And if we could free people from this work that is not really fulfilling for them, we could step into a phase of more of authenticity, of more creativity, of really maybe allowing people to instead of really focus and spending their energy and lifetime into repetitive work, allowing them to reconnect with their family, reconnect with themselves, and have more time and space to take care of themselves and others. And if they could free us of this time spent in labor that is not really adding to our lives and our beings, we could have a really different experience as human, as a collective.
No, I think that's an interesting potential. You know, of course, I think throughout the 20th century, that's been the promise of technology, is that it would free people from labor, like, you know, Maynard Keynes was talking about. By now, everybody would be living a life of leisure. And I think that why it hasn't really has to do with the economic system and how it's been used basically for capital owners to extract even more surplus, lay off people, and not have a society where those people can then afford to live. And so I think while I do find that promising, I also think that it will have to go hand in hand with many of these, you know, systems changes that we're talking about, where we don't have this sense of artificial scarcity, right?
Yeah.
And that there's much more broadly distributed ownership, like what you have in a cooperative versus, say, a capitalist firm or something like that, in order for these labor-saving devices to not just put more people on the street, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really funny because you just mentioned something that I was talking to a while ago when we were talking about AI, like when ChatGPT started, and I was having the conversation and I was sharing more of this criticism part about how it could replace people. Then that's exactly what I mentioned, that for we to really to step into this promising of, yeah, they could replace and really allow us to be more creative, do more stuff, and say, yeah, this can happen if we also have economic changes and really step into an economic model that the people, you don't depend on your work to survive. So if you can get to the state that people that have sovereignty and freedom to explore the time and know that their needs will be met and that they can still do stuff and don't be subjective to market and selling their time and energy to any job they can find, then we can talk about this transformation. But that's why I'm working in alternative economies and AI, because I really believe we could do that, we could achieve that. So yeah, that's my dream. That's why I'm engaged in AI in this way, because and the other side, I'm also engaging with economic alternatives and changes. And if we can combine those and maybe allow people to experiment a different type of living that they could see. I really like book Minister Fuller quote that is kind of highly famous, that in order to change obsolete system, you don't really change. I don't know the exact quote, but the idea is that you don't really change an obsolete system, you create a new one. So so people can see, yeah, there's an alternative. So that's why I as a person, I don't engage much in the politics system as it is, and economic. I don't try to fight within the system. My personal choice is, okay, let's gather with a bunch of crazy people like me and start doing this crazy stuff. That's where like our minds and hearts are actually at. So that's kind of what inspired me a lot. And that's why I'm so grateful to have found all these people and keep finding. So it's an amazing conversation that I had today, because a lot of things that you're sharing deeply resonates with me. And I know that there are many others out there, even though we're still kind of small.
Yeah.
There is a lot of us scattered. So I from personal experience, I came from this feeling of, oh, I'm alone in this world with this idea, to slowly starting finding people and say, oh my God, and being so in love with, yeah, there's other people that think like me, and being able to actually build something together and keep finding people. So yeah, I do hope that more and more people can have the same experience as me, and we can also bring the people that are scattered around the world, that are haven't stepped into what we're talking yet, but deep down they feel it. So yeah, we're able to attract them and start doing all this stuff that inspires us.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's my vision as well. It's always exciting when you know, you're building up a network and then you find a bridge to other networks that you didn't even know existed, and you know, that are thinking along the same lines. And it does give a lot of hope, because it in a particular place, you know, these alternative modes of being might not be very built up, but once you see that this is, you know, there's people thinking along these lines everywhere, and you can support each other in building up these local networks. That's when it gets really exciting to me. So I want to give you a chance to eat your food. So we can wrap up soon. Is there anything else that you want to say or talk about that we didn't fully cover?
Yeah, I think we talked about really interesting and amazing stuff. And you just mentioned while I was running away here trying to find my wallet, you mentioned about like community building, intentional communities, how it can be challenging. And you mentioned like you have to build from the ground up. And yeah, I really hope that I'm able to find this like for myself, like this type of community living, and also learn from people that have tried to and failed. And what is it? And now you mentioned about different networks and how they connect to each other. So yeah, it's really important to have this sort of conversations and bridge and connect people and really coming from this space of mutual support and understanding and openness. Just even though we disagree with a lot of things, we might disagree, like people that are for tech and people that are for community building, for instance. Although they might disagree, that we can find a place that we share some stuff, and we can just come from a space of trust and believe to mutually support each other. Because I think there's so much power if we can combine those like intentional local ways of living and also kind of this global network and technological people that are building all sort of tools. So yeah, I think I'm pretty good and covered a lot of important topics. So thank you so much for this amazing conversation.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you all as well for inviting me to the convening a couple weeks ago. That was cool. And I hope we can continue the conversation and potentially collaborate in the future. I think that would be great.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Looking forward.
Cool. Well, enjoy your meal. Sorry for keeping you from it for, you know, it probably looks really delicious over there on the table.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.